Welcome to Vital Connections On Air, a podcast brought to you by University of Minnesota Extension's Center for Community Vitality that explores the trends and topics important to communities and leaders throughout Minnesota. My name is Christy Kalavig, and I'm an Extension Educator with the Center for Community Vitality. And today I am joined by two of my colleagues, Beth Kalsten and Lisa Hines, who are both within the Leadership and Civic Engagement area of the Center for Community Vitality. Welcome to the podcast, ladies.
Hi, Christy. Thank you.
Hi, Christy. Thanks for having me.
Yes. And so let's start by getting to know you each a little bit more. Beth, why don't you introduce yourself to our audience and share what you do within Extension?
So I work with people in primarily southern Minnesota on a variety of skill building, teaching opportunities. I like to try to focus my work on participatory leadership skills when I can. And sometimes that is in cohort groups, sometimes individual workshops, and a little bit is now more recently in an online training and then in-person class that I'll be doing.
Great. And Lisa, you've been with the team a little bit longer than Beth and I have, and have a great deal of experience in the area of civic engagement that we're going to be talking about today.
Little bit longer. That's interesting because I'm thinking I've been here a lot longer. really, I came to this work in Extension out of experience of working in community-based organizations, in small nonprofits and organizations working at a community level. So combining that kind of education focus of Extension with the community development side of things really makes great sense to me. And that's the kind of the driving passion that I have in my work is about working with people like me before I came to Extension who are interested in building their communities. My work is prime. I work statewide, as it turns out. I like to say that my job is a road trip, and I really love the road trips that I get to make in Minnesota. I'm located in the central part, East Metro, but I end up getting on the road to go to a lot of places. So that's like Beth, I do the leadership and civic engagement work. I do individual workshops, and actually quite a bit of my work is with cohorts where we're together over time and really going deep on some of the material around both leadership and civic engagement. I love that "and" because I think leadership and civic engagement go together really well.
Well, thank you so much for sharing a bit more about yourselves. And Lisa, I'm going to start with you because I know that civic engagement is something that you are very passionate about and excited about in your work. Mm-hmm. And what does civic engagement actually mean? What is a good description of it? What does it look like?
Yeah. Well, I think, when I was hearing civic engagement for the first times in my work, I realized in some ways, it sounds like it's at a distance because it's a lot of syllables. It's a $25 phrase, as one of the participants in a program I work with would say. What I think at root, though, is really civic. Civic is about, sometimes we think city or local government or something, but civic is also about community. The places that we spend time, it can be our schools, it can be our neighborhoods. It's public life, I think, in kind of a basic way. And then the engagement part is really, how do we get involved? What do we care about and where do we want to put our attention? And so that's kind of a core piece about civic engagement that I would say. I'll pause there and give Beth an opportunity to speak to that as well.
Thanks. I think for me, it's really the collaboration piece and the shared decision-making and dialogue that goes on is what makes civic engagement different from maybe just participation. We often hear of opportunities for public participation or community input, and some of them are more robust than others. And I guess I'm drawn to the more robust end of that spectrum.
Mm. Yeah, I would probably add, I see it like Beth is alluding to, there's like this great range of everything from a light touch of just knowing about stuff to getting more involved or providing input at some level to running for public office. I would say that's a much higher level of public civic engagement, but that's not really the only way to get involved. And that's a great gift too.
What are some of the ways that people can be involved or that they might be already involved, but thinking, well, people say I should be more civically engaged. What are some examples of ways that folks are being engaged with their communities that kind of fall into the description of civic engagement?
Well, I would say some examples I would draw right from my work with people in communities and in their organizations would be, you know, being on a fair board, being on an elected position, whether it's that sort of classic civic engagement. But I think we also see it when people get involved on school committees, where their young ones are, or if there's a neighborhood organization, they get involved. You know, we just had our August Unite the Night, I think it's called, or something like that, where people come out. It might also look like the Relay for Life, where people get involved in working on a public issue of sorts, you know, addressing a deadly illness, and organize to take action at some level. Those are some quick examples that come to mind. I think some heavier duty examples come to mind that we haven't really seen in Minnesota yet, but there's some great work happening nationally and even internationally in some places around participatory budget work, where everyday people are getting involved in sort of municipal budgeting or city budgets, where they get a chance to help decide where some of the budget of a city goes, which is pretty exciting. You know, you think about it, you think, oh, we typically just pay taxes. But in a participatory budget process, it's a lot more heavy duty. And by heavy duty, I mean, you know, the degree of input that you can have is much greater. And we're seeing some great results in other, like I say, we don't have anything like that happening in Minnesota that I'm aware of at this point, but that would be on that like level of greater influence, public life process. Beth, do you have some examples that come to mind?
Well, so before I came to work at Extension, and I was actually in one of our civic engagement cohorts for water quality, and Lisa was one of our facilitators. And so in the water world in Minnesota, every large watershed area in the state is going through a process of watershed planning. And typically, that ends up being sort of the people that do that as their job, whether it's with the county or a soil and water district, the pollution control agency, et cetera. But there are opportunities for people who just care about those resources to be part of that. And so whether that's attending some planning sessions and giving input, reading materials, that sort of thing. It might also be another project that I'm working on. We're going to be encouraging folks who care about invasive species management to go and talk to the people at their counties, cities, whatever, about issues that they're seeing come up and how can they be involved. And folks will hear later on some examples of how some friends of ours in the Woodbury area are doing that. And so there's a wide range of things. I think it can also be even things just like of helping each other, doing work that helps one another. There's a group that volunteer philanthropy groups, a range of things that where you're really coming together to help solve. There's an issue and you want to try to figure out a way to help move it forward, help improve things. I think any of that can be civic engagement.
Well, Beth, your comments remind me one of the great things that I think of about civic engagement is really not just about, you know, what do I want or the people who are like me want, but the way in which we can bring in a broader range. I mean, the quality of community is really not just about one demographic. It can be youth, it can be adults, it can be across an income range, it can be across a racial or ethnic or religious range as well. And I think the best civic engagement when we're really dealing with broad public issues or even community-wide issues are really attentive to including a range of people, both inviting as well as stepping up. Because I think of the invitation as like if somebody's organizing or something like that, it's making that invitation so that others are aware that they could have influence and are feeling like, yeah, that's something that affects me. I want to get involved. And I think when you mention invasive species, it's like, we don't always think about that. But I certainly know from experience around Emerald Ash Borer that some of the civic engagement, people getting aware and getting involved, has really made a difference to community life. I know in Sherburne County, they've done some terrific organizing to get volunteers involved in helping identify and take care of trees that they're dealing with that have Emerald Ash Borer. So that's a different angle. And your comment about getting involved in a way that's broad just got me thinking about that. So
I think that as you have both laid out different examples, the one thing that is clear is that civic engagement is not necessarily sitting in a stuffy boardroom, you know, in yet another committee meeting, that there are ways to be engaged, that you are boots on the ground doing work and kind of building change.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. Definitely.
And do you think that our communities are more in need of folks who want to step up and become engaged, or are more ready to welcome those folks than they maybe have been in the past?
The words that come to mind are, it depends. Mm-hmm. I think we're seeing areas of civic life in the United States that, you know, right now, that are much more active. I was just reading an article about the great number of women in both Minnesota and in the country who are running for public office. I think it's unprecedented. And so there are places, not just there, but that would be one example, where we're seeing a lot more activity than we have maybe even a year or two ago. Mm-hmm. At the same time, I also hear organizations, public organizations, saying, wow, we don't have anybody show up to our meetings, or, you know, it's all quiet, and then something blows up in the paper or something like that. So there's elements, I think, where it depends. That's the quick answer. And maybe Beth has something she'd like to add to that.
You know, I think what I've seen, and I don't know if it's just that there are more things to join and be part of now than there were in the past or not, or if the leadership structure, I was reading something the other day that we're shifting to a more collaborative leadership style, just sort of in general here, and as opposed to just having the one leader that's in charge and allowing that. So one thing that I've noticed just in my own personal experiences and in the community that I live in has, I think, to do with the process and how the engagement is set up. I saw, and this was several years ago, but a comprehensive planning process that drew quite a few people, and normally people wouldn't show up. I've also seen mandatory community participation meetings having to do with stormwater, where they were held at 4 o'clock in the afternoon at City Hall and no one came. So that has to do with invitation and making things convenient, and how are people invited and who's inviting and all this sort of thing. So I think that sometimes maybe we say, well, we tried this and it didn't work and nobody came, but I don't know that we pay enough attention to why nobody came.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Great point, Beth. It reminds me that one of the things I am seeing among the people and the groups that are having success drawing a broader public in is a variety of methods. So instead of having the one night meeting at 4 o'clock or at 7 o'clock or something like that, I hear about people who are doing some online surveying to get input on some of the processes that they're working on. And in addition to the online meeting, when they put stuff in the newspaper or online, a lot of groups using Facebook these days to kind of put the word out, not just about a meeting, but to also say, and we've got this website and we'd like your input or something like that. So using social media in a variety of ways as well. And then having that traditional, what I'm doing air quotes here, if you can, you probably can't hear them. Using air quotes for that traditional meeting where it's like the folks who want to come and be face-to-face. I do think the quality of the face-to-face experience, you mentioned process, Beth, and I think we have had an experience of like the come in and there's a person in the front who tells, and then there's 5 minutes of what do you think, or it's meant as a large group thing. And I think we have a lot greater variety of options and practices that are being used, at least when I think of best practices, where those processes are much more, you know, small group and come up with some ideas and then share them back with a large group, or whatever, whether it's World Cafe or small table conversation or something like that, so that those face-to-face gatherings really allow for both sort of input at a small group level, but also dialogue, which I think is fundamental to having really good civic engagement, because I can know what I think, but when I talk to Beth and I hear how she thinks, I might change my thinking, or I might think differently because I've had an experience and a back and forth with someone who's different than myself.
I would add too that, you know, we live in a very instantaneous age right now. And one of the key pieces of good engagement is trust and relationships, or two of the key pieces, I guess. And, you know, that doesn't happen instantaneously. And so sometimes, you know, it's like, well, we did this, nothing happened, or we didn't get the result we wanted. And I think we're, again, too quick to be like, well, all right, let's work on this and maybe not expect it to happen instantaneously.
Mm-hmm. Oh, brilliant, Beth.
And I want to dig into this idea of process a bit more. Is there a best practice for what type of process to follow, or a model that folks should think about using when they are working towards an engagement effort in their community?
Well, to go back to what Lisa said before, you know, kind of it depends. So depending what, looking at the outcome that you want, and then kind of thinking back to what's going to help us achieve that outcome. So one thing I'll often say to groups is, okay, so, and I think this came from another coworker of ours, but, you know, don't let the janitor decide the outcome of your meeting. If you don't set your room up right ahead of time, a little thing, but if the chairs are set up in rows and you want people to have conversations, you need to move those chairs and get them in circles or something, you know, so you need to, paying attention and setting things up. And so, you know, Lisa was mentioning a few processes earlier, but it really does depend on what you want. I think the biggest thing is being clear on what is expected. So if the intention is we're sharing information, then that's great. Then those rows of chairs is just fine. And that's what's happening. If you're really doing more of a discussion and process and that sort of thing, then you need to look at something different and not being tied to, you know, like this has to be a Robert's Rules of Order meeting. And I just learned about a Roberta's Rules the other day. I want to dig into that.
Lisa, I know that our center has developed a model for civic engagement, and I wonder if you could kind of walk through the steps that are involved in that model.
Sure. I think I'll do it briefly. It's also on our website, and I'm guessing people can connect to that as well. What I would say is it really came out of the of experience and practice, and we look at literature. I like to say that good theory is built on best practice, right? So our model from the Center for Community Vitality has five parts, basically. It starts with, you start with a public issue, but people need to come together. So we start with a prepare stage of bringing people who are in community and potentially conveners, organizers. And then from preparing, we go into inquiring. And really, when you're working on a public issue, we're trying to both clarify the issue. Sometimes there's a presenting issue, and what we want to do is go a little deeper. Other times it might be like the water quality example that Beth mentioned, or she mentioned water planning. What we might need to do is inquire or learn about the issue more, right? Then we get to analyzing. So we've gone from prepare to inquire to analyze, where we're really diving deep into what kind of options are there and really coming out of that with what are the possibilities? So we've analyzed, we've learned, we've inquired, we've analyzed, and then we get to the synthesized place where we really get to the, okay, there are multiple options, or maybe there are different perspectives. How do we prioritize or perhaps create third and fourth options that really incorporate a broader variety of perspectives so that we can make what we, in the center, we coined the phrase making resourceful with F-U-L-L, big resourceful. Decisions, because public issues are meant to be inclusive, not exclusive. And then we move from that synthesize, that sort of making a decision about what direction to go, to acting together so that the issue gets addressed. So it's that prepare, inquire, analyze, synthesize, and act together to address the issue and make change.
As you lay out those different steps, is there a step that seems to be more challenging for folks or that you kind of have to really think about in order to move beyond that to get to the next place in your process?
I think for in my own experience and when I was in our cohort and question that seems to come up with groups is how do we get people in the room? Mm-hmm. And how do we, you know, that just initial getting it started, they seem to... Well, there's I would say points along the way where there's always some complications or challenges, but that initial piece. And I think the more I think about that, that's where a lot of the time and attention needs to go, and really giving, not worrying so much about like, well, we have this meeting set in 2 weeks, like we have to do this, which, I mean, sometimes you do have to based on what's happening, but really paying a lot of attention to that invitation process and stage. And you know, we did a webinar a while back on this with information from the community book by Peter Block that was really helpful. And I think just focusing on that part, it seems to be where people get hung up. They think an email or a notice in the paper is going to do it, and that's not enough.
Yeah. I actually, to that point, Beth, I recently did a series of interviews of people working in water, the water world, and successful kind of community engagement strategies. And one person I talked with said in their office, they were turning people out for an input process. I won't go into detail there, but he said one of the things they did, they did the paper invitation and they did the email for the folks who had email, because they knew not everybody had email. And then they called the people who knew each other, had a staff, and they said, I know this person, and four people in the staff called about 50 people. Mm-hmm. And individually, you know, where they had a relationship and talked to them about the event and said the closing line. And here's what really struck me. He said, we all said at the end of our call, after we'd talked with them and found out their interests and stuff, and we said, well, can we count on you? Can we count there? And I think there's a quality of invitation that happens in that says, you know, I know I've told you some things. It sounds like you're interested. Can we count on you to be part of it? You know, it's just a one night invitation meeting kind of deal. So things are going to vary with different kind of organizing things. But I think that practice of actually asking, and listening for that response, they actually had 90 people turn out.
Oh,
yeah.
That's
yeah. So they did, you know, and they had organized small group kind of conversation where people got to hear from each other, and people walked away. They said one of the feedback pieces we got was, I really liked this small group conversation because I got to hear what other people thought, not just what I thought. Mm-hmm. It's not like the usual thing. So when we go back to that process thing and that element of like, so how do we make invitations that make a difference? I think there's that quality of creating that dialogue right on the front end that says, we need you. Could we help make something you want happen?
As folks are kind of moving through this and they do the invitation well, they get folks in the room to have the conversation and you gather their input. Can you talk a little bit about that synthesize step in the model? Because I think that might be something that folks don't often think about as being part of civic engagement.
Yeah. That was the step when you asked what place people get stuck. That's the one I thought.
Okay.
That's hard because it says we got to choose, right? Mm-hmm. Or we got to come up with something that's more that you might have identified a number of options. And then you get to the point where it might not be easy to either make a choice or come up with an option that fits as many concerns as there are, right? Because the day of technical solutions, the easy, just apply here and the Band-Aid will stick and you'll heal. I think those days are still around, but they're not as much a part of our public life. We have much more complex, interconnected, no one in charge kind of issues. And that requires that we come up with new kinds of things that are really, that's why I think the synthesized part can be really challenging. I do think sometimes we, like Beth said, we lived in this kind of move quickly, instantaneous bullet point kind of world. And so the reality of trying to like get to a point where people come to some agreement, some consensus or some degree of, yeah, that's good enough. I think that's, you know, I don't go for great anymore in that. Sometimes it happens, but I think that that requires some effort both by the folks organizing, if that's the case, you know, if you've got like a public input process that an organization, a city or a public organization are sponsoring, or if it's a community organization, you know, I think part of the process skills of working toward consensus or general agreement are really important. And it means having really good listening skills, really good questioning skills, and the capacity to really hear things that sometimes are hard to hear before you get to the point where you go, yeah, I think it's good enough. I think it's good enough.
That's a very valid point that, you know, getting to like, all right, well, now what do we do and how do we choose? And it is challenging. Sometimes we want to throw everything in because they're all good ideas. And so some of the within our cohorts and workshops, you know, there we have some decision-making processes that we'll go through mm-hmm. with folks to try to help them figure that out and taking the time to do that. And I think too, the getting, as you're doing this process back in the preparing, inquiring kind of stages of making sure you cast the broadest net that you can cast. And so the stakeholder analysis and who's not here and how do we have as many voices, it adds to, in some ways can complicate things in that there's a lot of different information and viewpoints coming, but it also, when you get to the end, if people are seeing, you know, that they were heard and that their needs and wants are being considered, that's helpful.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You actually did a really nice job, Beth, of reminding me to go back to something you said earlier around trust and relationships. And I think when people, you know, we're talking some civic engagement processes can be months and long, long time. Others are shorter, you know, they're quicker. If it's like a process of like, let's organize a night out or a relay for life, those are shorter, quicker, more discrete kinds of activities. I think where the trust and relationships really get tested is in this synthesized stage or that decision-making stage where when we can come up with processes that say, we may have to accommodate, right? We may not each get all we want, but we might, as somebody I used to work with called it satisficing. Not satisfied, but being, it's sort of the difference between giving up a little bit, sacrificing some, but getting some, right? It's a compromise of sorts. And I think, you know, I'm really humbled just to even say that because I think there are public issues that are so darn challenging, so complex or so where there are such differences of perspective that it really is, it takes trust and commitment, relationships that say, I do recognize that we're in this together. And I think you are in this with me. And how do we keep working towards something that works for both or all of us? That's why I think that decision-making, that synthesized stage is difficult. Yeah. And now if we haven't turned everyone off of ever getting involved.
Well, it's valuable, said that it's easy. I mean, no, it's not easy. It's not easy.
I'll just finish by saying, you know, make the comment that it can be made easier by being mindful and respectful of different perspectives. You know, when you have people come into the room and they really, or into the room or online or wherever this happens, in the ways that it happens. I mean, I think when you look at people and sort of keep sort of an open mind and a willingness to learn from others and be, you know, and kind of accept that someone thinks differently than you. I'm not saying I got it all figured out either, but I have learned a few things about what it takes to kind of hang in there so that you get to a better result. So,
yeah. Well, and I want to ask you, we know that our communities look different than they used to. Mm-hmm. And so as we create civic engagement efforts, go through the process, how do we do it in a way that is respectful and inclusive of the other cultures that exist within the larger community?
Well, my first thought is that our communities have always been changing.
Very good
point. 100 years ago, we had different waves of immigration. I think we've always had different kinds of diversity in our communities, whether it be around faith traditions or just even recognizing that different age will create different circumstances for people. And so and yes, there are kinds of diversity around culture and race right now that I think are really at the fore, as we should be, right? We're trying to figure out how we work together and where we don't. How do we do that respectfully? Well, I think I go back to listening and willingness. You know, if you want to work with people, that attitude, that mindset is going to take you further than if you don't really, you know, if you just want my way or the highway. I think, you know, that sort of, I want what I want and not what we might create together. So I think sort of approaching engagement or community involvement with kind of a best intentions and a sense of, I think we need each other, particularly in communities that are very small. I think we have to look at how do we bring together the folks who really are living here, making their lives, making a living. At the end of the day, I think that's what most of us, we want a good life for ourselves and our families and the people that we care about. And so if we look at others in that same way, or at least in a variation of that, I think we can see an opportunity at least. So my thoughts. Beth, do you have things you would add?
Yeah, I would say too, to think about, if there's a way to find some trusted members of whatever community or group you're trying to involve and scope things out a little bit first. You know, even things like as basic as a location might be really off-putting to some people for a variety of reasons. Maybe there's fear or bad experiences or whatever. And so, like, okay, how do we find the most neutral location possible so that people feel that they can come? Do we have interpreters? Do we need them? How does that change the dynamic of what's going on? And so just really, again, with the process and paying attention ahead, the majority of the work, I think, happens before you even get people in the room.
Mm-hmm. You build those relationships. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You start, I think one thing we haven't really talked about that I realized I should have mentioned ages ago is not just getting people to the room that if you're the organizer that you want to be part of, but say you're not part of the group that's organizing and you want to be part of it. Part of it is like going to where people are.
Absolutely.
Coffee house or, coffee house or faith community or civic group or just soccer field that you might go and just hang out, ask people what they're, talk to people about, hey, I'm doing this thing or there's something going on. And being in the places where the folks, where either you want to be or where folks are that you might want to, that ought to be included or at least be aware. So you start building those relationships.
So what would you say are the benefits of civic engagement, either to the individual or to the community?
Yeah. Oh, they're endless. There's so many really good things. I'm jumping in a little bit because I think one of the things you can do when you have good involvement is you can quickly identify things, difficulties, challenges, opportunities, understand a situation or problem or issue much more completely than if you're just trying to do it with a group of public officials or with a group of people who are staff people, public staff. Not that the folks don't know their work. It's just that it's hard to be as complete as when you engage a broader range of folks. So those are a couple of things that come to mind right away.
I think the buy-in and willingness of people to actually do whatever it is you're creating. So, you're doing all this work to create something, some action that's going to happen. And if people feel like they were part of the process and that they, had voice in it, then they're probably a lot more willing to actually do whatever it is that is on the list.
So Beth, I think you're spot on in that when you get folks involved in solving the problems that they care about, they're much more likely to help take action on them as well, which I think is pretty powerful. I would add, as we're sort of talking it through, is like when you get people involved in a process, it kind of helps them see that they can use their power in broader ways than just sort of the place that they live, the home or their apartment or whatever the case may be. That it can really enhance future problem solving, right? Because people get involved and they say, "Yeah, we can." Then down the road, they might get more involved. I think about people who are involved in school issues. Or in faith community where it's like, oh yeah, we can do that. And that's true in community as well. Mm-hmm. That's kind of fun. I think too, there are regulations and requirements for public involvement in some or county, city, state kind of stuff. And I think part of what you do is you get it right the first time. You're kind of drawing people in so that you don't have to go, oh, we didn't realize. And, you know, sometimes that can still happen, but I do think there's a quality of like building better, more substantive decisions and outcomes by having people involved from the get-go or from at some point that really says, actually, we're willing to adjust based on what input we get. If you just have people come and be part of a process, but you kind of ignore what they do, you say, yeah, we want input or engagement, but what you really want is just to put the number of bodies on a paper, that's probably not going to cut it. People get cynical and such, and that's just not really good. But if you have a real, you know, if what people share with you actually is reflected in the results and the decisions that get made, I think you find that people are more willing to get involved down the road as well.
Well, and I would suspect that by having kind of a process that you follow, that it also lends itself to being, you know, more transparent. And if people can see that there is something that is being followed and that there's a clear path to where it's going, it's going to make people want to be more involved and just have more trust in you as a leader and as the organization you're working with.
I mean, it always goes that easily, but I think there is truth in that. And I think that's why we came up with the model in the first place. It's like, this is kind of messy. How do we sort this out into some ways that sort of make it a little more understandable and easier to kind of, oh yeah, that's what we're doing. Yeah. The roadmap helps. Definitely. Yeah. The map is not the territory, right? Cause I've taken some roads lately that definitely were under construction that didn't show up on my map.
So this is obviously a very big topic that we could have many podcasts to go into each little aspect of. What are some really good resources for folks that maybe want to dig in a little bit more?
Well, I think just from an overview standpoint, we've already mentioned the Civic Engagement website on the Extension website within the Center for Community Vitality. I think we also have some tip sheets in there as well for engaging the public. So those are sort of the quick and easy or quick, at least, handy kind of print it out and have some ideas to work with. Beth, do you have some thoughts that come together?
Was it National Center for Deliberative Democracy website?
Yeah, NCDD.
NCDD.org.
Dialogue and Deliberation.
Dialogue and Deliberation. Thank you. They have a lot of good stuff there. I'll shout out again for my favorite guy, Peter Block, and his book, Community, mm-hmm. The Structure of Belonging, I think it's called, has a lot of good pieces in it. Yeah. And we, you know, as your extension educators, we are here to help you. So feel free to call us, email us, et cetera. We're happy to just have a conversation.
Yeah. I as you talked, Beth, I should probably let us stop on that, but I got to mention the International Association of Public Participation, IAP2, is just really informed my work a lot over the years. I think they've done a terrific job, both the practice, but also framing up some of the ways of thinking about authentic engagement at various levels. They have a spectrum of public participation that has just been really helpful, I think, to a lot of folks, not just me, but folks that I've trained who's like, oh yeah, okay, let me see. What is it we're doing and what kind of tools are most useful at that level of engagement? So I have to shout out to IAP2 on that one.
And one more Minnesota resource, especially when trying to deal with or incorporate, invite diverse communities. Nexus Community Partners, our friends in the metro area, they really have made equity a focus of their work. And so they've got some great resources as well.
All right.
So as we close out our time together, what is a piece of advice or encouragement that you might provide to somebody who's been listening to this podcast and kind of has an itch to do something, but just don't feel quite ready to leap into it? What would you have to say to them?
I'd say decide to get involved some way. Pick something and just, you know, maybe it's going to a gathering or you see something in your community paper or online that says, hey, you know, that's a public thing, a public issue or something, just a little bit of problem solving. Jump in, just go. It doesn't mean you're committed for life. It just means you're going to start getting informed. And from there, you'll see what's next.
How about you, Beth?
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, I think, you know, you can go to board meetings, pretty much any nonprofit group's board meetings are open, or a community meeting, or even just watch it on TV. Pretty much all of our city council, county commissioner meetings are broadcast on, mm-hmm. on the internet or television. And so, you know, just kind of look and see, like, what do I like about this? What are they doing here that resonates with me or not doing or whatnot? There are more opportunities to be involved in things than there are hours in the day. So just go out and find it. Right. But find something that you like to start with, especially because you'll be more inclined to participate if you actually like what it is.
Yeah, I think my last comment would be, remember that you matter. Mm. Like, you may not feel like you're powerful or that you could add to the conversation. I would encourage you to just remind yourself that you are worth getting involved, and bring people with you. You know, find a friend, ask a neighbor or somebody from a community activity that you're involved in. Hey, you want to go do this, or just come with me. You know, let's check it out. Because if you sort of build community around things that you care about, you're already kind of building that element of civic engagement, right, with your own experience.
Well, I am definitely glad that I asked two of my friends to come along on this podcast journey with me now.
Well done, Christy.
Thank you for letting me have that fun little wrap up there. But thank you both so much for taking some time out of your schedules, and I look forward to having you back on the podcast in the future.
Thanks, Christy.
Right. Thank you.
Take care.
Be well.
Thank you to Lisa and Beth for joining me today to help us all better understand civic engagement. Make sure to visit our website, www.extension.umn.edu/community-development, where you will find our podcast page and all of the great resources that Beth and Lisa shared. You will also find our model for civic engagement and other information about the Center for Community Vitality. Make sure to follow us on Facebook and Twitter to stay up to date on new research and resources for communities and those who lead them. I hope that you will join me again for another episode of Vital Connections on Air.